Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong, profitable impact on your business.
Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and today I'm really delighted to welcome to the show Michael Rosenblum. He is the author of Happily Ever Always, a top-selling real estate broker's secret guide to confidence, contentedness, and security. I love that title. Michael is one of America's top real estate brokers, and he says that discovering your personal truth will empower you to find the balance and the security that you need to achieve your dreams. And at the heart of his philosophy is understanding how life's trials and triumphs, along with the myriad of people that you encounter every day, are integral to unlocking the mystery of happiness, or to happiness, rather. Today he's going to share with us several really key points: why you deserve happily ever always, how to overcome feelings of inadequacy and self-doubt. I don't know about you, but I struggle with that multiple times a day. I think if you're an aware person, you do that, and then you overcome it. How to uncover your talents and your gifts, and what spirituality has to do with success. And finally, how to trigger goodness in all areas of your life. Michael, good morning. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm excited to have you here. But before I pitch into a bunch of questions, tell people a little bit more about yourself.
Denise, first of all, thank you so much for having me. I'm humbled to be on your show and to speak with your audience. A little bit about my background. I grew up on the East Coast in the Washington, D.C. area, and I went to school in the Midwest and ended up coming to Chicago and staying here. It's a dynamic city, despite the cold that everyone thinks we have. It's got a lot to offer even at that point. A little bit about my background. After graduating from college, I got into the field of media, and for 23 years, I worked in that industry of media, specifically magazines, and on the business side, started selling advertising, moving up to an advertising director of a magazine, subsequently creating a travel magazine in the 90s, which was distributed through the New York Times, later sold it to a division of the Interpublic Group of companies, and then created one called Endless Travel during the .com. Unfortunately, nothing is in publication anymore. The publications ceased with what happened in the tragic 9/11, with the whole travel industry in general. And I had sold the books out in 2000, so I got a little bit of lucky. But certainly I have had my share of experiences. I then went into real estate by pure accident. I wasn't planning on it, but rehabbing and doing different things to places, selling them, and friends started saying, can you do that for me? And so a career was born, and it's been quite a ride ever since. Now, of course, everyone might think that's rosy, but it's not. In between, I spent years in litigation, lawsuits, all kinds of crazy things, dealing with some pretty crazy bosses, and having, I guess, the experiences that we all have, you know, in and out of our lives. And that's what allowed me to sort of write this book, which has been marinating in me for a very long time. And I wanted to do it, of course, in my 20s. You know, at that point, when I got out of college, I thought I would take the president's chair and work my way down. That didn't happen. So then in my 30s, I thought I was ready to write this book, and I wrote some excerpts, but it couldn't come together. And then in my 40s, and then when I hit 50, I said, this is the decade, I got to do it. And at 52, that was it. It was time to write it. And here we are a couple years later. I'm a little bit older, but it was all of the experiences that I had to go through in the 20s, 30s, and 40s in order to be able to mastermind the book as it is today.
And I
that was
going
a bit long-winded.
To ask you about that. No, it's great. Because I was going to ask anybody that's writing kind of their life story in their 20s, I'm not going to read it. Truly, I'm just not interested. You haven't lived long enough to have anything really of note to say, in my opinion. And, you know, that's kind of rough, I think. But, you know, you have to have those experiences, good, bad, indifferent, and sometimes downright crummy, to be able to kind of share that wisdom or gain in wisdom.
Absolutely agree with you. And that's, of course, why we can talk about why it's good to not be mad at your villains in your life, or why sometimes bad people who come into our world can actually be a positive force in getting us ignited to do something incredible. And we don't learn that when we haven't had that wealth of experience through the years. You know, it's that old expression, if I only knew now what I didn't know then, right?
And youth is wasted on the young, no question about it. I look back when I was a little bit younger and go, man, I mean, I realize now just how abysmally arrogant and stupid I really was. You know, school smart, book smart, I was a punk. I mean, in so many ways, I was just unpleasant. And I recognize that now and go, oh, it's too late to change it. You can't go back and change it, but you can certainly learn from it, right?
Without question. Absolutely without question. And that brings me to a point about what makes my book different is the fact at the end of various chapters, it cues the reader to answer questions about themselves. So in essence, they become their own book as they're getting their own discovery of who they are in order to find that platform of happiness, which I believe, and the reason why I wrote the book is because I truly believe everyone deserves to live in a mindset of happiness, not misery. And let me not get too saintly on this subject, because sure, all of us, we're humans, we're going to have unhappy times, we're going to have unhappy moments, but the book talks about how you can take that unhappiness and turn it into happiness so that, let's say, maybe 90% of the time you can live a happy life. And if you think of when we read storybooks when we were young, happily ever after, think of the word after. Has anyone really thought about the fact that it means almost an ending? It's over, it's
yeah, you're
done. But
right.
always, happily ever always is how a storybook should end, because happily ever always, the word always means endless, and it means a continuum, and it means that there is faith and hope, and it's going to happen, and it always does happen. And, you know, you think about life in sort of those moments when it's dark or things aren't working out or we're not getting that job or when is this cycle going to end or why am I going through this terrible period? But you want to know something? It does come to an end. It always comes to an end, and it's guaranteed to come to an end. And how I can tell you and everyone else listening today that statement, it's because let's follow nature. Let's look at the seasons, the dead of winter, the bare branches, the icicles, the cold, the gray skies, always brings the spring. And when we look at like a rainstorm or a hurricane or something that's crazy out in the weather pattern, and then all of a sudden the sun eventually comes out, that sun has come out for billions of years. It will always come out. In fact, it's actually sitting above that storm. But we don't think about the sun because we only look up at the sky and see the rain clouds and the rain and what's going on at that moment, and that's true of life. And so we realize that nothing is really bad. In fact, think of the word manure. Manure, it's disgusting, it smells, it's repugnant. Who wants to think about it, right? Okay, but when we mix it with the soil, it actually grows the vegetables which sustain our lives. So now, with all of these sort of examples that I've just given, let's think about our own lives. And if we reflect on sort of the bad times or the bad moments, maybe they're not so horrible. They're actually maybe springboards which are going to take us to a better place. You know, nobody was born with an instruction manual when they came out of the womb. You know, so
no.
It's all trial and error. But that's the greatest gift, is that in those trials, we learn more about ourselves, we learn what we're capable of doing, and we can springboard ourselves to greatness. We have those gifts within us. And I know we're getting a little ahead because we were going to sort of talk about different things, so I'm going to throw it back to you a minute to have a conversation.
Oh, not to worry. You actually, I mean, you're kind of reading my mind, because I was going to ask you what the title Happily Ever Always meant, although I thought I knew, and you explained it perfectly, so I was correct on that, which makes me very happy. But another thing that you've mentioned, a word that you've mentioned multiple times here, is moments. And I grew up enough eventually to realize that life is nothing more or less than a series of moments. I mean, if you want to wallow for an hour, go ahead. I will sometimes give myself permission to just have a little mini fit. But what happens is, the moment I concentrate on how irritable I am with this one particular client, which is present right now, that's why I brought it up.
Touché.
Oh, geez. But you know what I figured out with all these moments with this particular client? I realized that I was eerily calm about it, because I fully understand that when it's done, and it will be done today, I never have to speak to this person again. So I'm fine. I mean, 2 or 3 days ago, I was like, you are kidding me. You're a lunatic. I was saying all kinds of bad things in my head about this poor person.
Interesting.
She, whatever, I'm not going to say, is not. However, communication between us got a little bit stressed. When I finally said, I'm going to do the best job I can do for this person and then never speak to this person again, I got it. I was fine. And the job is gorgeous. Once I calmed down and started, you know, stopped reliving those really irritable moments, I was fine. But I had
and
to really take myself to task with it.
Absolutely agree with you. And isn't it interesting, because you see the power that you give yourself when you are not going to mirror that person's behavior, when you're going to rise above it and you're going to say, wow, I'm going to do the best job I can. I'm going to get this done. And you think about, wow, that person came into my life and they disturbed it and they disrupted it. But in the process, they made me realize how good I am at my craft and how wonderful I can do the things I do. So maybe that person came in just to kind of remind you of how good and talented you really are, because maybe you had sort of lost that thought for a bit and you needed sort of a little, you know, refresher. Who knows?
I know. And it may be that I just got a little bit too carried away with how terrific I am. It's like, well, why doesn't she want it this way? Why doesn't he want it? I'm right. Yeah, I mean, I really just spiraled down the hole. And finally, I pulled myself up and went, you have got to be kidding me. You are turning into a big whiny baby. It's unattractive. I couldn't even stand it. I wasn't complaining to anybody else, but I was sure complaining to me. And after a while, and this is kind of where I was going to go, was sometimes you just have to give in and wallow in it. I have found that if I decide, okay, I'm going to take 30, 45, 60 minutes, and I'm just going to wallow in it, after a while, I realize just how ridiculous I am, and I start, it tickles my funny bone, and I start laughing at myself. And that's what I did. I was like, really, Denise, you are so ridiculous. And once I went down that path, I went, okay, I'm calm, I'm fine, I'm doing the best job I can. In fact, I'm probably going to over-deliver just to prove that I can. And at this point, I'm very happy with the project. 2 days ago, I was kicking tires.
Mm.
But those were moments, and they passed. You know, I talked to myself, and you mentioned this at the top. It's a mindset. You have to kind of examine your mindset and say, am I going to wallow in this, or am I going to overcome it? I chose to overcome it.
Which is a marvelous thing, isn't it? Because it's so refreshing when we all do that. When we get to that moment. And, you know, it's interesting. Think of the word extraordinary. I love this. Extraordinary, extra ordinary. And we realize that everyone has extraordinary moments in their life. And how we get to that extraordinary moment is really simple. When we're going through the ordinary processes of what we do each and every day of our lives, whether it's looking for a job or looking for a sweetie or, you know, anything, and we get to the point where we're just exhausted from doing it because it's not coming together, and we're in that ordinary motion, and yet we say we're going to take one extra step, like right when you can't go on one more job interview or one more date or finish a 10K race, but you push yourself, you give yourself that extra push in the ordinary, you bounce into that extraordinary moment. So from the ordinary motion, you go into the extraordinary moment. And it's really overwhelming. It's an adrenaline rush. It's phenomenal. And it just reminds us that sometimes we can't give up. That's what the word tenacity is all about. And the gift that comes from it is just incredibly rich. It's like, you know, a never-ending river.
Well, that is brilliant. And you're right, because the minute you say, okay, I'm not going to let this overpower me, I'm not going to whine and cry, well, I did, but I'm done with it. It's just okay. And then you get over it and start laughing at yourself. And, you know, if you can laugh at yourself and go, really, you're going to whine all day long? No, you're not going to. But the thing is, and I'm going to go back to what I said a little bit earlier, life really is a series of moments. You can stretch them out into 45 minutes, or you can go, meh, I'm not going to do this. I think it really is a matter of being aware of what rabbit hole you're spiraling down, back to the fairy tales, and just saying, I don't want to do this. Let's do something different. And I know that sounds easy, but you have to stop in the moment and examine what it is that you're doing to yourself. If you can feel that your stomach hurts, your head hurts, you're gripping the phone too hard, you're kicking your tires, which I have done, you may want to stop and reevaluate, don't you think?
I agree with you. And you want to know something? It's okay to pull a moody every now and then. It's okay to have a moody moment.
They're fun.
Because in our moody moments, we hopefully find ourselves and realize, lighten up. Don't be so hard. You know, it's like everything is trial and error. It's like being in a laboratory when your experiment for a scientist doesn't work out the way they had hoped it to work out, but yet something comes in a different way, which ignites a new beginning, which possibly leads to an even better conclusion. So I don't think anything is wasted in life when we go through these sort of moody moments or tantrums or anything, because when we kind of awaken ourselves back up and we're reflective, we can have a rich education on how to push us to go forward. I mean, that's what my book, Happily Ever Always, is about. I mean, it's really that self-discovery. It's realizing that we're all diamonds in the rough. And if we think about a diamond, it comes from a huge chunk of rock that goes through the hardest cut and the roughest polish in order to shine into brilliance where the facets illuminate the light. It's the same with people. You know, we go and we move through time and we get battered and we have pleasurable moments and all kinds of things happen to us. But as we begin to shape ourselves and we reflect and we awaken and we move forward and we give ourselves permission, we realize that we have really special, unique gifts and we have the ability to achieve anything that we really want. And, you know, it's interesting because one of the things I talk about in the book is unlocking your gifts. And people say, well, how do I do that? How do I unlock the gifts? Well, think of the word gift. Gift is a present, right? And we live in the present, and the present is now. So the idea is that you have to listen to your soul. You have to listen to your gut. And if your gut tells you when you're driving down the street all of a sudden to turn right, even though the directions tell you to turn left, turn right, because there's probably something that's going to happen that's going to awaken something great. And once you begin to listen, then you have to give yourself permission, and you have to permit yourself to be able to do what you're hearing and what you believe is right. You know, over the years, I've had clients in real estate who have asked me, how do I know if it's the right house? And I tell them, when you walk in a house and you feel that your heart beats and a warmth comes into your body and a smile wraps your face, you know you found a house to call home, because that feeling is directing and telling you that this is the place for you. And I think that in today's world, we move so fast. Everyone wants it as fast as a web page will load. And it can't work that fast because people don't feel anything. They don't listen. They're just robotic and they just move. And when somebody yells, they yell. And you know, it gets a little crazy. So I think those of us who sort of stop and assess and look around and we listen to what is going on within ourselves and we permit ourselves to be able to do things despite everyone else might say it's wrong, it gives us these incredible gifts. And gifts are really fragile and they're very precious. And they're, you know, if they were overly abundant, then everyone would have so many of them, nobody would appreciate them. So that's where I'm kind of channeling back to the idea that when you listen and you permit, you get these gifts. And if you just are robotic and you move through and you don't listen to yourself and you just listen to everyone else directing you, you don't get the gifts. You do not, rather, get the gifts. Make sense?
Oh, I agree. I found out, kind of through trial and error, which is what, you know, life is, really, those moments of trial and error. Something may work for you one moment, doesn't work for the next. But it occurred to me one time, because we always have these internal dialogues. We're always saying, okay, Denise, I'm going to go do this, or we're going to go do that, or whatever it is. And it finally occurred to me, belatedly, in the shower. Isn't that where all wisdom arises, in the shower?
Of course.
Ask me about bathtub grants, but moving on. So it occurred to me when, you know, because I am always listening to what I'm saying to myself. It's important to hear yourself speak to yourself. And it occurred to me finally one day that when I say I'm going to do something, like I'm making my list or I'm setting a goal, I'm going to do something, that is pure ego. But if I hear in my head me saying to myself, okay, we're going to do this, I consider that my guidance system. That's the one I choose to listen to. Does that make
Brilliant.
Any sense?
It does. It
oh,
makes
good.
A lot of sense.
Okay, good.
Because, you know, when you think of the word ego, think about it. E-G-O, edging God out. And I'm not speaking about God in a denominational way.
Right.
I could just be speaking in a universal way. But the idea is, I believe the same as what you look at yourself and you realize, you know, what you're all about. I think that's so important, you know, which it brings us to the idea of what's self-doubt, right? How do we overcome self-doubt? And that's an issue I think that all of us deal with so many times within our life. And my feeling of overcoming self-doubt.
In my case, it's so many times during the day. I mean,
okay.
Seriously.
Well, I appreciate that.
We have those moments, and they may just be fleeting moments, and then you go, oh, stop it. You know, pull up your panties and go on, you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, I think we all have to kind of course correct multiple times during these moments that we're living. Don't you? I mean, we're course correcting all the time if we're paying attention.
Agree. Well, you want to know something? Like, think of our GPS when we're driving our car and we make the wrong turn, and for the directions, which is a little different than what I'm speaking about. What I was speaking about before, when I said turn right if it tells you to go left, that's because your gut. But let's just say we're following directions, you know, through a GPS system, and we accidentally make the wrong turn. It's going to redirect us. And I think, you know, the same thing with the self-doubt, you know, it we can redirect it. But my feeling of overcoming self-doubt is based on building your self-confidence. And, you know, confidence is found from picking yourself up after you fail at something or when you doubt something and it's not working out and you realize that you've got to have the confidence because you say, okay, this isn't working out, this project, but yet you reflect on the fact that I've done this before, I do this really well, I have the ability, I'm just sort of having a brain freeze or something isn't gelling, maybe I need to step back from it. But all of these sort of talking points to yourself is reminding you that you have the confidence to be able to overcome the situation and that you realize that your fear is nothing more than faith turned inside out. I mean, think of it. What's the opposite of fear? It's faith. And what's the opposite of faith? It's fear. And it's talking to yourself and reminding yourself. And these are some of the pearls that I weave through, you know, the book. But it's really interesting. We can't take ourselves so seriously. Don't you agree, Denise? We have to realize that it's all part of the journey, and we hear that so often, but in that journey, we really can be happy. It's how we sort of view life. It's how we look at ourselves, and it's also our sense of security within ourselves. You know, I made a lot of money, and I lost money, and I made a lot of money, and I thought, oh, making a fortune will make me happy, and I realized it didn't make me happy. And then I thought, well, when I fall in love, I'll be happy. Well, I fell in love and I fell out of love and I fell back into love and I realized that didn't. What made me happy was when I looked within myself and I self-discovered and I knew who I was and I knew what I was capable of doing. And I realized that in that process, that's where I've come for true happiness because as we go through life and the weather patterns change and things happen and we have those falls and we have those rises, we realize that when we have our true self and we are happy with who we are and we accept ourselves for who we are and we say, okay, I might be short, but I'm dynamic. And, you know, I might not be academically the brightest person, but I have terrific common sense and I've done great things. And you accept yourself. You accept who you are for who you've become. And you realize that's your security. That's your always. That's your, you know, happily ever. And nobody is going to bring you happiness if you don't find it yourself. And on the subject of money, yes, money can do a lot of things. It can bring a lot of material possessions. I know a lot of people who are of extreme wealth and they're not happy because they're not happy with who they are. So we come to the conclusion that money can buy you comfort in your misery, but it doesn't buy you happiness. At least it doesn't buy you lasting happiness. You can go buy a new dress, you can get a new suit, you can buy a watch, you can buy something, and it might give you a moment of excitement, even for a few days. But it's not going to last if you don't like who you are as a person. And in finding yourself and being authentic, that's what continues in the process of unlocking the gifts to make you the success that we all deserve to be.
Oh, listen, I agree. My grandmother used to tell us all when we were young, you know, money doesn't buy happiness. And she said, I smarted off one day. I said, yeah, but you'll sure be comfortable while you're miserable. And she just looked at me. I don't think I was wrong. I still don't think I was wrong. And I don't think I was but 10 years old. I understood that, you know, you needed a roof, you needed food, you needed a lot of things, but, you know, money may not buy happiness, but you still need it. So anyway, but no, you're absolutely right. So, and one of the, and I wanted to ask you because we're on the topic, how to overcome feelings of inadequacy and self-doubt. Do you have any kind of steps, like maybe one or two, three steps that people can stop in the moment and say, okay, I'm going to try this to bring myself out of this funk?
Well, for me, I find what I do is when I'm self-doubting, I stop obsessing about something and I reflect on what have I done that has been positive in its outcome. So I reflect on moments or events, activities, projects, things that I've done that have been really promising and successful. And I say, wow, yes, I did do that. Okay, well, I can do that again. So I shouldn't doubt myself so much. I shouldn't believe that I'm not capable of doing it. And again, I think it's that constant confidence builder of just reminding yourself of all that you've done that was positive and good. And when you do that in the moment of feeling inadequate, you begin to sort of get an energy flow or an adrenaline, which then sort of boosts you out of, you know, sort of that moody moment or that those sort of low feelings. And I think that's kind of really the best formula for somebody. It's just reassuring yourself and being reflective.
And I finally was able to do that with this particular, she really is a very difficult client. She's a nice woman. She's really a lovely woman, but as a client, not so much. But I learned that the hard way. But what I was doing, and you just said it, I was obsessing. I could not shake. And this went on for a couple of days. It really started bugging me. Gave myself a headache. I mean, it was just miserable, and I kept thinking just really kind of negative thoughts, and they just kept circling in my head. And finally, I did exactly what you're talking about. Like, I have a long history of very happy clients. Many of them have been with me for 10 years or better, and they continue to have me rebuild their websites and do their social media and consult with them. So there's that. And I finally said, all right, start making a list. And they way, you know, I mean, one side of the column, if she'd been in a boat, she would have capsized because she was over here by her lonesome, and then everybody else was happy. Mm-hmm. So it was me. But I fell into that silly, obsessive thoughts. And, I mean, I would wake up and just, finally I just stop it. Just stop. And I had a very stern talk with myself and went down the list, like, I've done this, I've done this, this is spectacular. What in the heck is wrong with you, Denise? It took a while. I mean, once I snapped out of it, I was like, I just wasted 2 days hating this poor woman who does not deserve for me to be mad at her. Shame on me. Okay, moving on.
But you realize that the reason why you were able to achieve success on what you just had was based on the fact that you decided you were not going to play in that that ground of negative behavior. She was being negative, you were being negative, but you immediately but you took yourself and said, I'm going to be positive about this, that she might not be acting in the way that she should, but I'm going to rise above the situation. And when you did, you saw the gifts that came, you ended up doing something that's spectacular. Now you wonder if you could interview her, what she learned from the situation. But the beauty of what you learned is that I'm not going to let somebody make me miserable because I have the power and control of myself in order to rise above the situation to be the very best that I can be because that's who I am. That's how I've overcome my self-doubt in life is I have gone through a series of experiences in life that have allowed me to postulate to this place today. And think about it. Think about when people are fighting. It's like I said earlier, mirrors, you know, negative, 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 negative. And we know in sort of science that two negatives equal a positive, but it's not going to be a positive until somebody decides to change their behavior and to be positive. You know, we're so quick to just be short-tempered today, and that doesn't take us anywhere. It doesn't do anything as far as being productive.
It gives you ulcers.
Exactly. But then when we're miserable and we let somebody become miserable, then we come home and if we're married and we're miserable to our spouse or to our kids or we go back to the office and we're miserable to our coworkers and all that negative energy isn't flowing in a way that's going to reap any kind of rewards or benefits. But yet, if we can say, I'm just as mad as a skunk, and I'm just absolutely incredulous with this person, but I am not going to let them have the power to run my life in a bad way. I'm going to rise above it. Despite the fact that they're behaving this way, I am going to remove myself from the situation. It reminds me of a time when I had a boss and I asked for a raise. I was making the company millions of dollars and I wasn't getting paid worth my salt. And I had asked multiple times over a period of a year and a half. And they said no. And I just thought, you know what? As mad as I was as mad as a hornet, I thought, you're not going to run my life. I'm going to run my own life. And I said, so naturally I was looking for a new job and I couldn't find it. And, you know, I was anxious and nervous because I thought, how can I quit a job without having a job? I've got bills and this and that. And then one day it dawned on me, I'm so angry and I'm not going to allow these people to behave this way. So what am I really going to do? Do I believe in myself? Do I really believe in myself? And I thought, I do believe I have a lot of talent. And with that, I decided, you know what? Somehow, some way, I'll survive. Whether I have to wait tables, wash dishes, I am not going to let somebody keep me in this situation. And so what I did is I quit. I quit. And it was interesting because all kinds of things started to happen. But I immediately found a job and made a lot of money and ended up making twice what I was making. But the interesting thing that I came to realize from the whole experience was that maybe the universe, maybe it wasn't about me going from one job to the next job. Maybe the experience of me having to quit the job and not fall into fear, but have enough faith in myself that somehow, some way I would survive. And I did, was teaching me about the fact that I have the strength to move forward in the face of fear. And that's what courage is, moving forward in the face of fear and saying to yourself, I believe enough in myself that I am not going to be somebody else's prisoner. And when you do that, all kinds of things come together. And so I ended up finding, you know, that job that ended up paying me a lot more than I was making. And perhaps I wasn't going to get that gift from the universe, or it wasn't going to happen in the way that I wanted, which was traditional, which was, you know, society says don't quit a job before you find a job. Everyone will tell you that. But sometimes it doesn't work that way. And why it didn't work that way for me was because I had to build confidence in myself and say, I really am good. I'm making this company millions of dollars. They don't want to pay me, but I know I'm good enough that I'm willing to chance it. It's like when people go to Vegas and they bet, you know, they're betting that, you know, it's going to all come together. Sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't. But when it doesn't come together, the great thing is that we can still pick ourselves up and we can modify the situation because, like in Vegas, you're playing cards. Guess what? If you're playing poker and you don't get a good set, you know, you can always shuffle and come up with a new, I'm not a poker player, but you can, you know, you can come up with a new hand, you know. So the idea is that, you know, look at the deck of cards, everyone's got a joker, but yeah, we can keep shuffling. It's like life, and eventually we'll find our ace. But believing in yourself,
exactly,
the power of that is the most incredible thing that a human being can give to themselves, believing in themselves. And that's the shiny brilliance of the diamond.
And that leads me to how we uncover, excuse me, our talents and our gifts. I think you've covered a bit of that, but do we have to just kind of stand back? And I've been in that same position. I'm a highly committed introvert. I do not play well with others. I run with scissors. You don't want me in your office. Truly, you don't. So, and I learned that about myself a long time ago. So I did the same thing. I went back to school. I got a computer science degree. And then I quit. And I had 6 months to prove to myself that I could create a business, and I did. But you know why I did, how I did? I never wavered in my belief that I could do it, that I would do it.
You know, incredible.
Did panic set in? Oh, God, yes. Did I stop? No. So at some point, I was able to uncover my talents and my gifts, not entirely sure how. But if you could share how people can just kind of walk down that path and, you know, stop, explore, listen, rinse, repeat. What do people do to find out what they're really, really good at?
Well, you know, finding out what we're really good at is also what we really enjoy, what makes us happy. I mean, think of all the businesses that have been born from people just doing what they truly love. And I think it comes back to the point that there are so many people in this world that just listen to what others tell them to do rather than listening to themselves. And when you don't listen to yourself, you don't really unlock those gifts that are embedded within you. We're all a special person. You know, we have that DNA and we have the chromosomes and we have what we received from our parents, but then we also have these additional special things that make us who we are. Think about you and your brothers and sisters. You were all raised in the same house by the same parents, and yet you're all very different. And that's the thing, is that we are all very special people. And being special is having these little diamonds, which, you know, I said to you, are buried within you. The diamond is buried within that chunk of rock. But it's the same thing. It's listening to yourself. It's giving yourself permission. And then it's accepting the decision that you've made. And I think that's so important. And as I said to you earlier, I don't think people move always in that direction. They're following what others are telling them because they're afraid. And as I said earlier, there's nothing wrong with fear. It's faith turned inside out, but you have to listen and permit yourself to accept the fact of doing what you think you need to do in order to find your peace and your happiness. And part of that is, you know, triggering the goodness in all areas of your life. And triggering goodness is nothing more than sort of that golden rule of treat others the way you want to be treated. You know, it's interesting. I every time I go to the grocery store and I'm in line, I watch the people as they move through the line at the cashier. And I have to tell you, most of the time I do not see or hear somebody look at the cashier when they are ready for their turn and say, "Hello, how are you?" They're just either on their phone, they're just standing there, they're busy. Well, it's interesting. The cashier says hello, why don't you say hello back? It's mind-boggling to me. It's like getting on an elevator and saying hello because you're standing there with a crowd of people. Why not? Do you realize in that moment of saying hello to whoever's in the elevator, that could be your next spouse, that could be your next boss? I mean, that's unlocking the gifts, you know, as far as externally. You just never know. But when you want somebody to treat you a certain way and you don't treat others that way, how do you expect that to happen? And, you know, that's also part of the pay it forward, you know, concept. In
exactly.
Doing something nice for others, it springboards back to you, and it's just being real. It's being authentic, and that's the way we need to live in the world in order to be able to maturate happiness and greatness, you know, amongst people. And I think it's just very important for us to think about that. I mean, if you tell somebody you're going to be at a meeting at 10 a.m. on such a date, and you show up 10 minutes later and don't give a courtesy call, that's not very nice. Now, when that person does that to you or somebody does that to you, how do you feel? You don't feel great. So why would you do it to somebody else? You follow what I'm saying, Denise? Don't you agree?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And when I was younger and when I was that punky, arrogant kid, I was chronically late. And it never occurred to me that I was really stealing people's time. I mean, it just never occurred. But going back to your story about the checkout line, I live in the Deep South, so it's a tad different here. You know, the checkers are trained, you know, to say, you know, good morning or hello or how are you.
At the Piggly Wiggly?
Not the Piggly Wiggly. I don't even know.
Winn-Dixie?
I'm not sure we even have those anymore. Or that. Ralph's anyway. But they will always say, you know, good morning, how are you? And I have noticed, like you, I'm a people watcher, and I'll, you know, people say, oh, I'm good. I don't do that. I have learned, I had to teach myself this because I realized I was being rude. When somebody says, good morning, how are you? I will say, I am well. Thank you for asking, and you. Now
yes.
We've got a conversation going on.
Yes.
You know, they've acknowledged me. I've acknowledged them. They're going to be a lot friendlier and a lot more willing to help me if I need something out of the ordinary. And it gives me an opportunity to say, really? You know, your mom did that? Really? I mean, it's just, and I'm an introvert, but that doesn't mean I'm shy. When I'm out in public, you would never know I'm an introvert. But it just seems to me if somebody says, how are you? You don't just say, yeah, I'm good. I think that's very rude.
Absolutely. And again, it's the idea that we never know what can come of just doing one nice thing. We don't know what it can come. You know, people have often said to me, God, if I want to change something and I'm in a rut, what do I do? Like, how do I get out of my rut? And I always say to them, what you do is you do one just something, one activity, something different than your typical daily routine or weekly routine or monthly routine. Like, for instance, okay, I'm thinking on the top of my head, maybe you go to a yoga class or you go to a fitness class that you've never been to. How do you know when you go to that fitness class you won't meet somebody who then introduces you to your next spouse? I've used that repeatedly during your show today, but I'm not looking for a new spouse, but it's funny, you know, I don't know, I keep saying that, or a new boss, and I'm not looking for a new job either, but I'm just drawing examples, but the idea is...
No, these are things that people tend to focus on, so I get where you're going. Me,
yeah.
I've been married. I would rather be hit by a beer truck twice than do it again, just so you know. But
well, you want to know
done.
Something? I am too, and I'm
done.
Happily. But but that being said, no, it's the idea that change is a good thing, and change is something that allows us to birth new experiences. And how we go about change is to introduce something that we normally don't do, which then triggers a whole series of events, kind of like dominoes in a positive way. But don't look at it as a fall, you know, that when dominoes fall, it's bad. It's actually, you know, a good thing. But changing one thing in your daily routine or weekly routine or monthly routine is what births the possibility for a new experience. And that's what's so great, and that's what we were talking about with the checkout line or getting on an elevator, or you just never know. It's that nice, tender moment that you would appreciate somebody doing for you, that you do for somebody else, which, you know, is the opening to endless possibilities.
Absolutely.
So.
I mean, you really don't know. And I'm going back to the checkout line. And this happened some years ago, and I still smile when I think about it. And when I say some years ago, it's probably a decade or better. But I was in the grocery store. It's one of the few places that I'm willing to go to, because mm-hmm. I have to. But there was this older lady. She probably was in her late 70s, early 80s. She was immaculately dressed. She was so cute. Her hair was perfect. Her nails had been done. She was wearing a little, you know, like a, not leggings, what do you call those, little cut-off pants, capri pants. She was
mm-hmm.
wearing, I think it was pink, cute, and she was just beautifully put together. And I looked down, and she was wearing sparkly flip-flops, you know, sparkly sandals, and her toenails had been done. I said, you are the prettiest thing. I love your shoes. We talked for probably half an hour. It was a decade ago. I don't know if she's even still living. I still remember that moment and how she lit up and the great conversation we had. These
wow,
things can happen. I mean, they can really kind of change you.
Isn't that incredible? And when you think about it, it sort of is inspirational, I'm sure, for you, which then, you know, at whatever day you're thinking about it, probably can open a possibility. But apparently it was such a positive that it's still inspiring to you, which is incredible energy.
Yeah,
that's fantastic.
And I think that's about the time that I learned to say, oh, I'm good. I'm well. Thank you for asking. And you, or how are you? You know, I think I learned some lessons in manners that day, to be honest.
Oh, absolutely agree with you. You know, look, I mean, none of us are saints. I mean, the other day I was on the expressway and I, you know, tried to squeeze in a lane and I cut somebody off. And I thought to myself, that was really nasty. Like, where am I going that I have to be there in a hurry? It wasn't like I was late to a meeting. But the point is I thought to myself, that was wrong. That was really naughty of me. You know, again, it's being self-reflective. And I realized that, you know, next time somebody cuts me off, touche, karma is, you know, powerful. But it's just the idea of when you do something wrong, you know, right the wrong. Say to yourself, you know what? That's not right. I don't like when people do that to me, so how can I expect to do it to someone else? You know, you can't do to others what you wouldn't want done to yourself. And I think that's also systemic to our happiness and the maturation of the happiness. And you know, look, we're all just living life, but if we can be kind and we can be gentle and we can be gracious and we get that in return, it's empowering and it's uplifting, and it really puts, you know, the right type of flow into all of us succeeding in the way that we want to succeed. But when we look at self-doubt and we look at, you know, horrible moments, we have to realize that everything is in change. The seasons change, the weather changes, and maybe that's sort of a Taoist or, you know, Eastern religion type of philosophy. But the point is that there are no guarantees in life, and there's no such thing as security. I mean, Helen Keller was brilliant. One of my most favorite quotes from Helen Keller goes something like this: security is mostly a superstition. It does not exist in nature, nor do the children of man experience it as a whole. Life is either a daring adventure or nothing. And if you think about it, it's brilliant. Don't you agree?
Absolutely. It's one of, I've actually got it up on my whiteboard.
Wonderful.
Are we related? Are we like twins or something?
I think so. Hey,
I'm convinced that we know each other.
Absolutely. Have you ever thought of this? Think about this, Denise, and all the listeners out there. I wonder if we move around in pods. You know, it's interesting if you have ever seen that Netflix show Sense8, but if we move around in pods, like think about this. Like when you go to the store and you buy eggs, there's a dozen in a carton and they're all lined up 2 by 2 by 2, right? So I wonder if it's the same thing with people. I wonder if we have our connections and we're sort of like moving in an egg carton. We've all been separated and we're finding our way back, but we sort of collectively sync with others because they're somehow in our pod, and we teach each other. Think about it. Really. I mean, we go to school, we learn academics, but really in life, it's people teaching people. Like you said the other day, when this woman was horrific to you, you know, she actually taught you how good you are at what you do and how you decided I wasn't going to play in her negative game, and you postulated yourself to a more positive frame. But in essence, she was your teacher. So when we talk about, like in my book, Don't Wish Your Villains Away, hey, don't, because those are great moments that successfully allow you to get to the next level. So
right.
It's really interesting.
And when I shifted my attitude, even though I didn't necessarily communicate that to her, her attitude shifted along with mine.
Yep.
You know, she's not as nasty. She's not as demanding. And I hadn't said anything to her about it, although I wanted to, but I didn't. I just want the job done, get it out of my way, move on. But the thing is, I mean, I kind of agree with you on the pause thing. I think we do attract what we need at that moment. We learn our lessons. But I'm finding that I'm attracting such a tremendous quality of people into my life, and I have been for a while. So, you know, I'm apparently actively looking for people like you, and you're looking for people like me.
Yep. Yep. That's kind of the pod putting itself back together, but it's marvelous when we have these moments of connection with people and when we supersede a situation that's wrong and we make it better, and it's a euphoric feeling. It's really wonderful.
Well, I just felt so grown up. I walked around and patted myself on the head like, good girl. I was so proud of myself. Listen, we've only
As
got
you
about
should be.
Four... Yeah, I did. I was patting myself on the head like I was my own dog. Okay, we only have about 4 minutes, and I do not want to lose this because you mentioned it at the top of the show, but one of the questions I had for you is what spirituality has to do with success. So can you cover that in 4 minutes, or do we need to bring you back?
No, that's totally fine. So let's talk about spirituality and how we define it. And I think spirituality is about being, you know, B-E-I-N-G, be in yourself, which is sort of being self-aware. And we become self-aware by being self-awakened and self-reflective. And, you know, that idea is the idea that when we're in our moment, we realize that is what's going to sustain us. And it's going back to the idea that we realize that being ourselves and being true to ourselves is what guides us through life in a state of happiness, as opposed to money, which can come and go. You can make money and lose money. And again, the idea that can make you comfortable in your misery, but it's not going to sustain you. And it's the same with love. And when you find peace, you realize that the material items are like the icing on the cake, but without that icing, that cake is still going to be delicious because you're the cake, you're yourself. You know, it's the idea of just being and being connected to yourself. And no matter what comes your way in a material world, it's not going to rattle your cage. You know, and I think about this often because I think about, like right now, I've been reflective and very charitable in making contributions to the people who suffered the great fires out in California. And, you know, what does it feel like to lose your home? It must be just a horrific feeling. And, you know, I mean, that's your nest and your sense of security and a whole lot more. And that's tough to overcome. And how do you overcome that? But it's also realizing the strength within yourself to say, this too shall come to pass. And again, this is sort of like the dead of winter that brings the birth of spring. Something will come. The fact that maybe people are making all these charitable contributions to help those people and help those people rebuild their lives and their homes, you know, that in their own process that they're going through of devastation, it's the idea that the phoenix will rise from the ashes, that there has to be something positive from what's appeared to be so negative. And I think that we get to the point of saying, well, that's hope and that's faith, and we have to implement those thoughts into our life, because when we look around and we see devastation, it can be very destructive to our emotional stability. And the only way to overcome that is to throw ourselves into saying, you know, this is terrible what's happened, but thank God there's, you know, the kindness of strangers, or you know, I'm going to be able to get some money, or I'm going to be able to rebuild, and maybe it will be better, and in the process I'm going to learn something or start something or start a new business or do something that I never thought of. And that's how I look at everything in life. I mean, we've all had our moments. I mean, I could go on and on, Denise, if we had the time to talk about, you know, all the bad things that I've seen happen in my own life that I've turned into positives. But, of course, not everyone wants to hear that, but it's tough. It's tough. And I think that the process of self-acceptance and self-reflection and self-awareness and listening to yourself and permitting yourself to do things and realizing that failure is success, trying to be reborn, and we can have those extraordinary moments, you know, from those extraordinary motions, all of this. And the idea of believing in yourself and being reflective of what you've achieved when you're doubting yourself so harshly is what is going to allow us to live in that happiness that we so deserve and what we've been brought here for. Because we certainly haven't been brought here, you know, to live in a horrible state of mind. It's just not natural to have to live in misery. So
it's
that's
not
my thought.
And I agree with you. I wish more people understood that when you choose to live in misery, I mean, there are some things that you're just not going to be able to change right away, but your mindset, how you view yourself, how you view the people around you, the world around you, that's on you. You do have control over that for the most part. So I think, you know, what you've shared with us today is going to give an awful lot of inspiration to a lot of people, and I really thank you for that. Before I let you go, where can people find you on the web, and where can they find your book?
Well, Happily Ever Always is my website, happilyeveralways.com. The book, I have to tell you, I'm quite humbled. We hit number one bestseller in the category of spirituality and number nine bestseller in the category of job hunting on Amazon. But the book is available through 32,000 outlets in 12 countries. But fastest way to get it is probably Barnes & Noble or Amazon online rather than going to a bookstore and or any other place that you would normally buy books online. You're going to be able to find Happily Ever Always. And I hope people appreciate it because I wrote it for helping people. In fact, 50% of my royalties are going to charities for children and for the elderly. So it's not even about making the money. It's just really trying to start a happiness movement.
That is brilliant. And I actually downloaded the book from Amazon, so it's on my reading list for this weekend.
Well, please, you'll have to know. Let me know your thoughts and post a review.
I will. I'll leave a review.
Let us know what
I
you
will.
Think because the reviews are interesting. Thank you.
I know. Well, listen, Michael, thank you so much for spending this hour with me. It has been a pleasure speaking with you. And I thank you for all of the wonderful tips and the advice that you've shared with our audience. And I mean, the stories are fabulous. But before we say goodbye, I would love to remind our audience to be sure to look for us in iTunes. Just look for Your Partner in Success Radio and take us along on your success journey. Michael, thank you again.
Denise, thanks so much for having me. This was fantastic and fun.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on Your Partner in Success Radio.